This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening, and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePauw. This week, we preview the upcoming vocal recital of faculty Barbara Paré. We chat with students about their off-campus opportunities in Vienna and New York City. We introduce you to new faculty member Christopher Lynch, and we strand College of Liberal Arts professor Ann Harris on a desert island with a 5-minute iPod. We chat with faculty and student about the Beethoven Topics course, and we go into the woods with Stephen Linville and Emily Barnash as we chat about the upcoming musical. There are lots of exciting things happening in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Sunday, September 16th, the School of Music will be presenting two performances. At 3 p.m., the Percussion Plus project that we discussed on a show earlier this season will be in Kresge Auditorium. And then at 7:30 in the newly renovated Thompson Recital Hall, we will have Barbara Paré, soprano, and John Klodfelter on piano bringing us a vocal recital. Here to talk about this is Barbara Paré. Welcome.
Thank you.
First of all, I'm glad you're performing so early in the year. It's always great to have performances right as the school year starts, and oftentimes the students are still shuffling their books and figuring out what's going on this semester, and so it's always great to have faculty performances from the beginning. Tell us what you're performing.
Our program is called The Poetry and Prose of Johann Wolfgang von Goethe.
Ah.
So we are doing things from Faust in French, and Wilhelm Meister, a very famous set of Wolf songs, Schubert favorites, all Goethe poems.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found a turn-of-the-century American composer, Mary Howe, who has set two books of Goethe texts.
Really?
Both in German and in English. So we will be performing four out of her first book in English.
Now, see, that's an example of the way in which serious music has overlooked the great composers of our past that are female.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful that you've discovered this composer. There are so many wonderful works, actually from the very beginning of time with
Correct.
Hildegard.
That, yes.
That, and we often don't get to hear female composers. So this is a remarkable opportunity, and all centered around the works of Goethe. What a fantastic performance. Do you have a favorite on this program, or are they all favorites?
John and I have performed the Wolf set before, and it is really part of us, and mm-hmm. he and I have been performing together for quite
right.
some time.
Yes, it's like watching one person perform from two places at the same
Thank
time.
You.
You guys are really on the same page,
Thank
and
you.
He's quite at a...
Yeah, we have enjoyed exploring the Mary Howe,
mm-hmm.
and we've never performed this Schubert set together.
Mm.
I've sung them, and he's played them for many other people.
I see.
So that's been interesting too.
That's great.
And then the Faust is the aria from Faust by Gounod, the
right.
jewel song, the very famous jewel song.
This is really some of the greatest songwriters of all time, all in one performance.
I tend to go for the text first,
mm-hmm.
and it just seemed to kind of work its way out. I thought this would be really interesting, just doing Goethe texts.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, of course, everyone knows what a brilliant writer he is. And then you have added to that these great composers.
Mm-hmm.
Schubert, who one of the greatest songsters of all time.
Right.
A brilliant, melodic, just music flowed from him. And Wolf, I don't think you get better than that.
I don't think so either. It was really hard to just not do an entire German program.
Right.
But when I found out about Mary Howe's works, we could perform them in German, but I thought it'd be very interesting to do them in English
mm-hmm.
with her turn-of-the-century language.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like Amy Chaney Beach.
Right, right. And so this is a really fascinating recital because you're getting some of the hallmarks of vocal literature and some of the great composers of vocal literature, but also this new undiscovered gem
mm-hmm.
here, a turn-of-the-century female composer, and a great opportunity to hear a wide variety of settings of the work of Goethe. So thank you for bringing that to us, and thank you for coming in today to chat about it.
Thank you for having me.
Bei dem
Students at DePauw have remarkable opportunities within the College of Liberal Arts and the School of Music, but they also have remarkable opportunities around the world in their semester abroad or their semester doing their internship. So joining me in the studio to chat about this are three of our seniors, Gwen Eberts, Blaine Cuss, and Emma Shearer. Welcome.
Thank you.
You guys have done some pretty remarkable things last semester, and you've just joined us back in Greencastle, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, Gwen, what were you up to?
I was in Vienna, Austria.
Wow.
Yes.
What were you doing?
I was studying music and also just experiencing the culture.
Wow. How's life in Vienna?
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. A little slower than here.
Just a little.
A
yes,
little
it
bit.
Is. And the coffee's better.
Yes.
Yes. So tell me some things you were doing.
I took private lessons for bassoon. Had a great teacher. Learned how to interpret gestures instead of, he didn't know English that well. So it was fun.
That music is the universal language, right?
Exactly. There. Exactly. It's a lot of fun. And went to see a couple of operas. They have €3 standing tickets. So
Wow. Walking
around, experiencing.
And you took some classes there as well?
I did. I took a Schoenberg topics class.
Mm.
And just an art and architecture of Vienna, Austria.
Nothing like studying the second Viennese school while you're in Vienna. That's mm-hmm. the perfect place to do that. How about you, Blaine?
I was actually also in Vienna.
I see Gwen a theme here.
Gwen and I lived in the same apartment building. I lived above Gwen, actually.
How about that?
We crossed paths quite often. I also took private instruction. I'm a tuba player, and I studied with the tubist for the Vienna Symphony.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so that was pretty awesome.
Wow.
Good times there. And then I was also in the Schoenberg in art and architecture course.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
A remarkable opportunity. And Emma, you were closer to us, but not by much.
Yes. Yeah. I spent the semester in New York City, actually, working full-time for the Dramatists Guild Fund, which is a nonprofit arts organization that focuses on helping playwrights and composers and lyricists and people who write for the stage. It was through the Management Fellows Program that I'm a mm-hmm. part of, and I worked actually very closely with another DePauw grad who was a theater major and management fellow named Rachel Ruth, and it was an amazing experience.
Yes, and you also worked with another DePauw grad, Gretchen Cryer.
I did, yes.
She's the president of the
She is the president, yeah.
And I have a terrible confession to make to Emma, and that is that as I was busy meeting new folks, I'm in New York, and I'm there for a Dramatists Guild event and some very impressive guest lists. And I walk in, and of course, Emma's completely out of context now. She's not at DePauw. She's in New York. So I didn't even recognize that it was. And I thought, well, look at this professional person. She is so on top of it. And for a person so young to be doing this job, she is really impressive. So I come up to chat with her. And as soon as we start talking, I'm like, wait a minute. This is Emma. This is a DePauw student. And so I tried to disguise my surprise. And I said, how are you here? What are you doing? And she said, oh, I'm interning. And I thought, now what kind of intern has the opportunity to work with Stephen Sondheim?
It was pretty amazing. I got the opportunity for our 50th anniversary gala. I was in charge of our pre-party, which was for exclusive kind of high-end donors, and hosted by Stephen Sondheim and Adam Gettle.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing.
In Adam Gettle's apartment.
Yes, in Adam Gettle's apartment, which is a two-story, you know, penthouse in the Upper West Side.
Adam Gettle wrote The Light in the Piazza, mm-hmm. and strong composer of musical theater in his own right. And the two of them sat down and played a few tunes and talked about their life. That was very impressive. And the actual letter from Brahms that he had framed on the wall. And the Tony Awards that were sitting nonchalantly by the fire.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. There were just a few things like that. But it was funny because our president, Brian Casey, and I went to this together, and we're sitting at this table, and all of these famous people, you know, are at our table. The composer of The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, the musical, was there, and the list went on and on. But I'm looking around, and I'm like, wow, there's Cheetah Rivera. Oh, my.
Liza Minnelli.
As
our guest of honor, yeah. One of the performers.
Right. Yeah. Liza Minnelli. Who
Joel
else?
Gray.
Joel Gray. List went on and on.
John Cryer.
Christie Brinkley, John Cryer, mm-hmm. Bebe Neuwirth.
Yes. Karen Ziemba.
You know, and the funny thing about it was, we're just sitting here, and I'm like, wow, look at all these famous people. And suddenly Joel Grey bursts through and starts off with Cabaret. And mm-hmm. I thought, wow, this is an amazing evening. And you kind of ran that whole thing.
I did. I helped mostly with the planning, the coordination leading up to the gala. And then we kind of, for the actual event, gave it over to the gala consultant. But like I said, I was totally on my own for the pre-party, so that was kind of an amazing trial by fire situation, but I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot.
This is what DePauw does so well. I mean, we bring these great students to campus, and then we kick you off, and we send you out to these great places. I mean, to take lessons with the Vienna Symphony Principal, that's a remarkable opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. It was phenomenal, and he was very good about meeting me exactly where I was. I was a little intimidated when I learned of his post,
yes.
I guess, it's just a little scary.
Yes, indeed.
As an undergraduate student to be studying with someone as accomplished as he is at playing. But he was really, really good at meeting me where I was and just working through some basic playing technique stuff with me.
Yeah, because it's often hard for players at this level to come back to their college days and remember what it was like to be a college student. You know, you've played at that very high level for so long. That's a real challenge.
He was very clearly in touch with that. Franz Winkler was his name. He was very clearly in touch with that and helped me lay a really good foundation for furthering my work here at DePauw.
And for the two of you to be studying Schoenberg in the Second Viennese School in Vienna and to be going to the Vienna Opera and to have the opportunities that you had, is it tough to come back?
It's a little tough. I'm glad we had the summer as kind of like a buffer between real life and not real life.
Right.
But yeah, it was so worth it.
This is a great opportunity that the folks at DePauw have. And you guys go out and make us look so good that when we want to send other people, they go, oh yeah, send us some more of them because they were so good at what they did. So thanks for coming in today to chat about it. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So here is some music from Arnold Schoenberg and the Second Viennese School that we just referenced. And then some music of Kurt Weill that will lead us into our next segment. Thank you.
girl like you ought to be on the stage.
Why, how could I get a job on the stage?
Easy as walking around the block for a girl that's got all that you've got. Wouldn't you like to be on Broadway and go dancing at the Zanzibar and have an up-and-coming boyfriend who can make any course in par? Hey, kid, wouldn't you like to be on Broadway and wear some Bergdorf Goodman clothes, red alligator shoes, a golden anklet, and 17 dozen nylon holes? Hey, kid, wouldn't you like to see your name up in the bright lights and the white lights that gleam and glow? Wouldn't you like to be the leading lady in my heart, but also in some Broadway show? Wouldn't you like some personal promotion to a niche on the great white way? Wouldn't you? Hey, kid, how about it? Hey, kid, wouldn't you like to be on Broadway? It's just a few blocks over. I know the way. Hey, kid, it's easy. I'll show you the way.
No.
Why not?
I just don't think that's the way I want things to be, that's all.
We're also pleased to welcome a new historian to our faculty here in the School of Music. Joining us this year is Christopher Lynch, and he's here in the studio to chat with me. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about where you're coming from.
I'm coming from the University at Buffalo. That's where I've been doing my doctoral work. I'm writing my dissertation there right now. Hope to be done with that by May.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I was teaching at SUNY Fredonia State School, also in New York, just a little bit outside of Buffalo. So that's where I'm coming from.
Great. Yeah. And you've got a fascinating dissertation topic you're currently deep in the weeds on, I understand.
Yeah, I am deep in the weeds. Yeah. Yeah, I'm writing about Broadway opera, kind of where it came from and what it was. I came to the project in grad school. I did a paper on Oklahoma. Just kind of picked it out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I started noticing all of these references and reviews and articles about the show, references to opera.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of fascinated to me. Why are they relating opera to Oklahoma? How could they even compare the two? It seems so foreign to us today.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of my project is going back and looking at how somebody in the 1940s could say a Broadway musical is like an opera.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain. Oklahoma, every night my honey lamb and I sit alone and talk and watch a hawk making lazy circles in the sky.
The American version of opera is really fascinating. I mean, when you think back to importing European opera to America,
sure,
how American audiences responded to European opera, and then our, I don't know if we can say, can we say that musicals are a response to the European opera, the American musical, or?
I think so. I mean, especially what I'm looking at, the Broadway operas, so things like Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma and Carousel, South Pacific, Kurt Weill's Street Scene,
mm-hmm,
works like that.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger, you may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know even then, that somewhere you see her again.
They seem to be a direct response to the failure of the Metropolitan Opera House to establish an American style of opera.
Mm-hmm.
In the first few decades, it was starting in 1910 until 1935, the Met really tried to create an American style of opera. all of these operas were pretty bad and were pretty much regarded as failures. There are a couple of successes, but pretty much it failed. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that we see the Broadway musical rising in the early 1940s after that program failed in
right.
the 1930s.
So in a way, we bifurcated at that point, and we said the Met is going to bring us great European opera, and America's response to that will be on Broadway.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. And you're also addressing this in one of your courses?
A little bit in both of my courses. Music in New York City, we'll touch on this issue as well. And I'm teaching History of the Broadway Musical.
Right.
Yeah, this will be a prominent theme in both of those classes.
And I understand you wrote the dramaturg note for our production of Into the Woods.
I did. Brooke Addison and I, we both wrote those notes together.
That's great.
And I'm looking forward. I'm going to address the cast this coming Thursday. It should be fun.
You're deeply enmeshed in DePaul culture already.
I'm working on it, yeah.
Well, we're glad you're here. Welcome to you and your wife, and we're glad you joined us here.
All right, thank you.
I've looked in the windows at diamonds. They're beautiful, but they're cold. I've seen Broadway stars in fur coats that cost a fortune, so I'm told. I guess I look nice in diamonds, and sables might add to my charms. But if someone I don't care for should buy them, I'd rather have to love him not. What good would the moon be unless the right one shared its beams? What good would dreams come true be if love wasn't in?
Students at DePauw enjoy the opportunity to work with faculty almost one-on-one, small class sizes and lots of research opportunities. And here to join me to talk about the Beethoven Topics course that's going on is Sarah Tibbetts. Welcome.
Thanks.
And her professor, Dr. Matthew Valenzuela. Welcome.
Hello.
Good to have you here. Music history at DePauw is a survey course, but it's also topics courses that follow where you can really drill down into the life of a composer or a movement or a theme. What brought up Beethoven?
Well, definitely we want to find a topic where students can follow their interests in both instrumental and vocal music. Mm-hmm. There are sacred and secular issues, there are soloist pieces and large ensembles. So for me as a teacher, I think the class has a tremendous diversity for the types of research students can do. He's also one of the most studied composers of all time. There mm-hmm. are biographies, there are analyses of his music. There's philosophical, there's economic issues involved. There's such a diversity of research topics that students can do that it's a natural fit for the kinds of things we want to do in the topics class.
So does he make it into the top echelon of your composer favorites personally?
For me personally, I actually prefer Mozart a little more from the classical era.
Because that was last semester's topic.
That was last semester's topic. But I think Beethoven's universally acknowledged. He's one of the most performed composers in concert repertoire. And I think there's very little doubt that a lot of people think of classical music, think of Beethoven as sort of their ideal composer.
Absolutely, right. And so what brought you to the class?
I was in the Mozart class last year.
And I heard only rave reviews about that Mozart class. You guys did some really cool things.
We did some really cool things, including a capstone of a gingerbread house with Mozart.
And his little children's
graves.
Yeah, and his children all around. That was, yes.
But I really love the way that a lot of Professor Valenzuela's classes are laid out, with kind of a culminating research project at the end. I was his music history tutor for the survey class last semester. So I really love the music history part of the liberal arts education.
So what was your topic for Mozart?
I looked at his outlook and how his own philosophical ideas were put into his later works, looking especially at the Ave Verum Corpus that he wrote at the end, which is such a gorgeous piece.
Isn't that?
And so different than a lot of the other stuff that he had been doing.
Have you decided what it will be for Beethoven yet?
I went to a Beethoven concert at Blossom Music Festival in Cleveland, Ohio, with the Cleveland Orchestra, and I listened to Beethoven's Fifth, but I also listened to a piece that they called a programmatic piece, which is weird because it's not really a Beethoven thing to do. So kind of looking into his influence on Berlioz, and Berlioz had looked back at Beethoven, so just kind of looking at those two things and comparing the two composers, that's where I'm going, and that'll keep getting more specific as the semester goes on, for sure.
So this is an interesting challenge for the professor, I would imagine, because you've got all these different interests in the class, and then you're kind of trying to manage all of these different research events going on simultaneously.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that interests me. In the survey, it's more memorize this, here's the date, memorize this. But in the topics class, you want students to follow their own interests, and that can lead them down interesting places, make them ask questions, make them doubt the first assumptions they had about the music, and it should be more organic and developmental throughout the whole semester. Mm-hmm. The writing then begins to distill the sorts of research they've done. They see the holes, they see where they need another analysis or more evidence. And so both the research and the writing are processes by which you get them to a better understanding over time.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you're the editor of a major journal, so you do this for professionals as mm-hmm. well as for students. Do you find interesting parallels?
I think in both cases, students don't understand that for a professional journal, we might go through 11 revisions. This is just what we do. I'm finding footnote mistakes in things that are sent by other college professors. I'm finding errors of grammar, and this is just the way everyone gets better, no matter what level of education and what level of research you're doing. There's always a communal reciprocity, working together dynamic of the system.
It's interesting because musicians often have a challenge when it comes to writing about music. That's a special skill. First, they have to become writers, which is challenging enough, but then writing about music is a particular challenge. How have you responded to that challenge? You've already done it now with Mozart, and you're about to do it in Beethoven. Have you found that to be particularly challenging for you?
It can be really difficult, but there's also a creative part of it that's really kind of fun. You get to talk about both the intellectual development over time and what other historians have had to say about it, and then kind of posing your own ideas at the end and saying, this is what I think happened. And also just getting the chance to work one-on-one with professors like Professor Valenzuela and going into his office and saying, I don't know what to do anymore. And then he sees the hole and he kind of helps you move forward. So I think the challenge is just coming back to it again and again and again mm-hmm. and signing up for the process and dealing with the fact that you're going to write five versions of the same paper. And that one paragraph that you end up not even putting in your final paper that you spent 2 days on is, you know, it's saved on your laptop, but it will never see
the brutality of the cutting room floor.
Indeed.
Those things that never made it to the light of day. And this must be a blessing and a challenge, I guess I should say, for the faculty, because on the one hand, I'm sure it's exciting to see your students blossom and become writers and researchers and the like. At the same time, your door must be practically on a swivel.
It's gone to Skyping in the evenings a lot of times.
That's
students
really
are easier to talk to. But yeah, it is a conversation, and you're having 15 simultaneously different conversations with people. They're at different places in their research, different places in their writing, and it just all stumbles around the same time. But I think it tends to work.
It does. It works very well, and it's a remarkable opportunity for our students and our faculty alike. And thank you both for coming in and chatting about it.
No problem.
Thank you.
At Music for Life, we like to bring in a guest and ask them, if you were stuck on a desert island and you had an iPod, but a defective iPod that only played for 5 minutes, what piece of music would you choose to be marooned on an island with, and it's the only 5 minutes of music that you can have? Well, all last season on Music for Life, we asked the School of Music faculty this question. This semester, we've decided to ask that question of the College of Liberal Arts professors. And the first to join us is Professor of Art Ann Harris. Welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for playing along. So, you're stuck on a desert island. Your iPod will only play 5 minutes. What is it?
I think after I get done, you know, bewailing my iPod, I would go for any Borodin at all. And any Shostakovich at all.
Really?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Those would be the
so
two.
Why Shostakovich? Let's start there.
Shostakovich because he'd give me something to think about. Because even though I'm an art historian and I teach women's studies, I think there is a part of me that is interested in pure aesthetic structure, even mathematical structures. Uh-huh. And the way that his music moves would give me something to think about for 5 minutes in chunks. But because the music to me moves in such structural ways, and because you can put different parts of the melodies that you hear together with things that work against and for them, I would want to think with Shostakovich.
Uh-huh. And then is Borodin for the same reason or for another reason?
Borodin would soothe my soul. He would. It's just there the melodies kind of soar above, and there's violin and there's hope, maybe hope for rescue off my desert island.
But, or at least a new iPod being dropped by.
At least a new iPod. But there it's actually, there it's the simplicity and the lyricism of it that... And also, to be personal, it was the first CD I ever bought for myself. The first classical music CD I ever bought was a Borodin CD at a used CD store in Chicago in graduate school. And I loved it, and I still have it, broken.
That's
and
funny,
everything.
Because that's the question I was going to ask you, was when you started this love affair with Borodin, and I see it's an old college fling. So here we are with a little Borodin. Thanks for coming in, Anne.
You're so welcome, Mark. Thank you.
Our musical production this year, which is produced by the School of Music and the theater department together, is Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods, a Tony-winning, remarkable tour de force of musical theater. And here to chat with me about that is Emily Barnash.
Hello.
Who is playing
The Witch.
The Witch. And Stephen Linville.
Hello.
Who is directing The Pit and doing the musical direction. So welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks.
This is a great show. I love this show.
It's been really fun working on it.
How's it going?
It's actually going really well. There are a lot of challenges in the show that I don't think any of us thought about before we started rehearsing.
You mean like the magic, or do you mean like singing or playing these parts?
The actual music.
The music is hard.
It's hard. If you listen to it, you think, oh, well, yeah, that's not too bad. I sing the same thing a few times. And then when you start learning the music, you think, oh, it sounds the same, but it's really not.
Yes, yeah. That's true. So, because he does those little phrases that are close, but not quite the same.
Yeah, right. So we've had a lot of time in rehearsal when we say, all right, here we go. Oh, stop. Try again.
Yes. Which act are we on?
Stop. Right.
Yes. How many times do you go into the woods? Yes. Into the woods.
I kind of want to count.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many times.
Right. And that's slight variation. I mean, of course, you as the witch get the rap.
Yes, yeah, the rap.
You know, I always wondered why Rapunzel didn't get the rap. But the witch gets the rap. And what is the rap?
The rap is the first thing that the audience hears from the witch. And I get really involved in the story that I'm telling to the baker and his wife about kind of the backstory to all of Into the Woods.
Right, how the story got started.
Right, and so I'm talking about my garden and how the baker's father stole these beans from my garden, and so all this has come upon everyone.
Can you do a little of it?
Oh, heavens, okay. Greens, greens, nothing but greens. Parsley, peppers, cabbages, and celery, asparagus, and watercress, and fiddle ferns, and lettuce. He said, all right. But it wasn't quite.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, Stephen, you missed your part. You're supposed to go.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I should have done the drum part. Yeah.
It's really intense and it's really fast. And I'm always out of breath after. I'm just like.
Yeah, and it's these incredible lyrics.
Oh my gosh, so many words.
I mean, I don't know of any musical with the word arugula in it.
I know.
You know?
Just memorizing, I was like, okay. Cabbage, celery. I'm like, when do they all come? All these like lettuces that some of them I've never even heard of. Right. I was like, oh heavens.
Yes, that's what part of the fun of this musical is. There's a variety of great musical moments, and there are some, as is always the case with Sondheim, some really brilliant lyrics. You know, one of my favorite lyrics of all time is that life is often most unpleasant. You should know that as a peasant, and should take the moment present as a present for the moment. You know that. Nobody but Sondheim can pull that
right
off. So what's the highlight of the show for you, Stephen?
It's been really interesting working with it. Some of the most beautiful music in the show is actually the witch's music, mm-hmm. which is a little unexpected.
Yeah, well, at the end, the second mm-hmm. act, when she loses.
First act, when in the show, the witch has Rapunzel on a tower and treats Rapunzel as her daughter, even though she's not really her daughter.
Mm-hmm. I stole her when she was a child.
And so when Rapunzel falls in love with the prince and tries to leave, the witch sings, you know, don't you know what's out there in the world? Yeah. And it's so touching. And actually last night at rehearsal, when we were doing it, I was in the pit watching Emily do it. And I'm like, don't cry. Don't cry. Just keep singing. Don't cry.
And I was like, I tear up every time. And when I was working on this by myself over the summer, I was just like, oh, this is good. I wrote myself a whole backstory. And then I got into rehearsals and I'm just like, yeah. And I was like, okay, don't cry.
And the baker has the same tear-jerking tunes too.
Oh my gosh. No More is definitely my favorite number of the whole show.
Oh, there are so many great moments in this show. And it's like a greatest hits album. You know, it's
actually
like,
there's
no filler. It's all great stuff. You know, the bit with Little Red Riding Hood. Who's playing Little Red Riding Hood?
Elika Okerstrom.
She'll be great. And the wolf?
Mike Padilla.
So that's a great scene where the wolf comes up to Little Red Riding Hood and he has a line in there, something about there's no way to account for the pleasure that comes from singing to your lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting. Our show is a little bit different than the normal Into the Woods. There's actually dancing in it. So they, the wolf and Little Red Riding Hood, do sort of a Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire sort of dance as he's singing to her and saying, I'm going to eat you.
Yes. It's great.
Yeah, that is a hello, little girl.
Yeah.
That's a terrific piece. Last semester, we talked to the director of our show, Tim Good, who is doing the stage direction, and he gave us lots of glimpses into what was happening, and it's been great to have you guys on to chat about it from the musical perspective. So our show goes up.
It's at the end of September, the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. The Thursday through Saturday shows are at 7:30, and the Sunday show is at 3 o'clock, and tickets are on sale now.
You can get them on Brown Paper Tickets.
Mm-hmm. Or you can come to the box office.
You can come to the box office. You can look it up on the internet. You can go to depaw.edu. Lots of ways to get in to see one of the great musicals of all time, Into the Woods. Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thanks.
Good day, young lady.
Good day, Mr. Wolf.
Look at that flesh, pink and plump. Hello, little girl. Tender and fresh, not one lump. Hello, little girl. This one's especially lush, delicious. Hello, little girl, what's your rush? You're missing all the flowers. The sun won't set for hours. Take your time.
Mother said straight ahead, not to delay or be misled.
But slow, little girl, hark and hush. The birds are singing sweetly. You'll miss the birds completely. You're traveling so fleetly. Grandmother first, then Miss Plump. What a delectable couple. Ah, to perfection, one brittle, one supple, one moment,
Mother
my dear.
May fall, the path and never stray.
Just so, little girl, any path, so many worth exploring. Just one would be so boring. And look what you're ignoring. Think of those crisp, aging bones, and something fresh on the palate. Think of that scrumptious carnality twice in one day. There's no possible way to describe what you feel when you're talking to your meal.
Mother said not to stray, still I suppose a small delay. Granny might like a fresh bouquet. Goodbye, Mr. Wolf.
Goodbye, little girl. And hello.
And so that concludes our show this week, and we're going to wrap it up with a performance by the Percussion Plus Project. They're doing a Michael Dougherty piece here, Shaken, Not Stirred. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. Our student producers are Bea Dagaford, Anna Gatdula, Adam Lumen, Frederico Poppy, and Matthew Skiba. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week. Thank you.
It's Music for Life.